This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Have a Friday. How about it? Grant and Danny on the Fan, field tripping today out and about. We are at Pupatella Pizza in Chantilly right off Route 50. They got happy hour specials running all show long at Pupatella, serving the real MVP of flavor with authentic, delicious, hat-trick-worthy Neapolitan pizzas as we are getting ready for Game 3 of the Caps and the Canadiens tonight. Washington hitting the road, looking to go up 3-0 in their best-of-7 series. Of course, we'll be breaking down the NFL draft all show long as well. The Commanders last night pulling off a bit of a surprise at pick 29, not only sticking and picking, but a guy that we had not talked about was the selection, and that was offensive tackle Josh Connerly Jr. from Oregon. So we got the draft. We got the Capitals. Yep. We got Juan Soto back in town to take on the Nats, who have won 4 of their last 6. And we're about to be eating some delicious pizza with our friends out here at Pupatella. Try to screw this day up, Rouye.
Yeah, I can't.
You can't do it.
Now, I'm good at messing stuff up. We all know that. But I can't mess up today. I'm going to sit. I'm going to speak when it's my turn. And I'm going to eat some pizza stuff. I can't wait. Can't wait, Bart Scott style. Last night was fun. The draft had some dramatics, had some adventure. People are trading. The moving, the shaking, all good. Washington helped Jaden Daniels. You'll never get me to be upset about that. Life is good, my friend.
Yeah, so I want to get into the first round and recap it here, but we'll do that in about an hour at 3 o'clock. We'll talk non-Commanders. I was actually surprised. You talk about moving and shaking. Only 4 trades. I thought was pretty shockingly low. The record low is 3, so we narrowly surpassed that. But there certainly were surprises. Shedeur Sanders' free fall, a couple of the players that went off the board earlier than they were supposed to. So we'll go back through the specifics coming up in a bit. I want to start with Connerly, though, and the Commanders. But a couple of notes on the Capitals as they get ready for Game 3 tonight. You just heard in the update from Toby, Alexi Protas made the trip.
Let's go, Pro. Let's go.
The big fella.
Let's go.
Is closing in on getting back on the ice. Now, I don't know anything. Like, generally, you could probably stop right there.
That's not true. You know a couple things.
I don't know anything about Protas playing tonight.
Oh.
I'm just going to assume, and maybe I'll assume wrong, he does not play. I think this feels like gamesmanship to me from Spencer Carberry. What he did in the net in Game 1 with Logan Thompson acting like he may not go the entire time, and then the lights came on for pregame skate, and he was the first guy out on the ice, and he was ready to roll. I just don't know, in a 2-0 series lead, with Protas seemingly not yet 100%, I saw him, still had a limp walking after Game 2. I've watched the videos like you guys have with him skating. He does not look to be skating 100% to me. I'm not, Michelle Kwan, but it does not seem to me like he is skating at his peak. I don't see it tonight. But the fact that it's a maybe, the fact that we can start playing these games, if that's what we're doing with him, maybe playing, maybe not, already for Game 3 is a big, big deal. I bet you we don't see him till much later in the series if needed. But he's on the trip, so that's a good sign.
Well, yeah, I'm betting the same thing, but the big takeaway here is that it's in the ballpark, is that now there's a conversation where it might happen. I thought this was going to be even more longer term. Like, he skated some, but come on, he can't possibly be expected to go in a game without some kind of extra padding or some sort of makeshift shoe to protect the top, and then in which case can he be himself? I thought we were talking about the second round, to be honest with you. If at all, the fact that he made the trip, I think, is already a bigger deal. He's going to come back sooner than I anticipated, so that's got me going a little bit.
Have you seen, and I'm guessing this isn't out there, but has anyone talked about where the actual cut is on his foot?
I haven't seen it, no.
I know in hockey they don't really divulge information. Is it odd to anyone else, though? He cut his foot. He could not put a skate on for several days. He still is affected when he walks and when he skates. Mm-hmm. Like, what part of the foot got cut? I'd like to know.
Side, top, the other side, probably not the bottom. That's the only place I don't want to say I can rule it out, but I'd feel comfortable betting on. But yeah.
Dr. Hutier. Did you see the picture, by the way? I tweeted it out if you guys want to go see it. I think it's my last tweet at Grant H. Paulson. It is one of the funniest things I've seen in a while. I don't know what happened with the photo, but there's some type of angle. Some photographer would have to explain it to me. Protas is standing next to Ovechkin, and Ovi looks like he is six. Looking up at Alexi Protas, who looks like George Mirason, standing next to me in the box at Capital One Arena a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it's like the ball boy with an NHL player.
And I know Pro's a big boy. 6'6", it ain't nothing. But, I mean, Ovi's 6'3".
Yeah.
He looks like he's like, Mr. Protas, sir, can I have your autograph? He's British, right?
Ovechkin? Yeah. Little British boy.
I thought that was the big story, was that he was a British
hockey
player.
That's the big reveal that no one knows about. Yeah. Give me your best, Mr. Protas. Any tips for success as I start my hockey journey? Little British boy voice. This is Ovechkin as the little British boy. Artistic interpretation live from Pupatello, Chantilly, Grant Paulson. Whenever you're ready, get in character.
I need a pitch whistle. Give me some British.
This is yours. This is your character.
I just want you to talk. You don't have to do little British boy.
Okay, what do you want?
Just give me some British stuff.
All right. My lords, would it be possible that we could have some pizza here at Pupatello? Is that something that's on the table?
Give me more of like the angry Vinnie Jones British guy.
Oi, let me get something straight, right? If you're sitting here telling me I'm not going to eat pizza, we're going to have some words, aren't we? Okay. It's going to be a problem. Oi, you feel me?
Yeah.
Right? You see that?
So now you want, okay.
The little British boy. So he's any more aristocratic?
Mr. Protas, sir.
Mm-hmm.
If it pleases you, sir, I'd love to learn how to play hockey.
There
please.
It is. There it is.
Now, good. I think the little British boy's voice is changing or something.
Well, he's going through some changes. Yeah. We all do. It's normal.
It's very normal.
Part of life. Circle
Don't
of
worry,
life.
Bud. It'll be over
hey,
soon.
Bud. Don't worry about that acting.
That picture was hilarious, though. And on behalf of the show, before we move on to the draft really quickly, I want to pass along our well wishes to Craig Lachlan. Did you see his tweet today, Danny?
No, I haven't seen it yet. What happened?
So Locker's out on the telecast again. Obviously, he had a very scary situation with his heart and was out for several weeks. He tweeted today, Caps fans, unfortunately, I have not been feeling 100%. My cardiology and medical team have advised me to miss a few games. I'm disappointed to step away from the booth. He said, but I can't wait to rejoin Monumental Sportsnet's broadcast very soon. Go Caps.
Wishing him well. So obviously, far more important than our listening pleasure. He is the best. I love him so much as an analyst, but more importantly, he is a well-rounded, complete human being. So his health is the most important thing. So get well soon, buddy.
He was just on the show
on
Wednesday, and he was feeling great, and he was loving life and ready to call hockey. But health and everything going on is finicky.
Of course.
And we're thinking about him and crossing our fingers that he is on the mend here already, but that he's back in the booth very soon. So Locker, get well, my guy, and hopefully the Caps get him a Game 3 win tonight, and they go up 3-0. Against Montreal. Mike Tice, a former NFL head coach, longtime O-line coach, watched all the tape on all the offensive linemen for a project he was doing for Yahoo. And his favorite offensive lineman in this draft class was Josh Connerly Jr.
How about it?
He'll be on the show to talk about that coming up in about 20 minutes at 2:30. I want to ask him why he liked Connerly so much. But let's get into what Washington did. They stayed at 29, Danny, and what was amazing about when they got on the clock was all of the exercises we went through, clearly knowing nothing for weeks and weeks and weeks leading up to the draft. A lot of the guys that we said wouldn't be there were. It was amazing last night how many of the players, for various reasons, fell. Some of them were medical, right? Will Johnson, the cornerback from Michigan, based on this knee injury that we now know people are worried about and the health of his knee moving forward. He was available, was not supposed to be. They could have gotten Mikey Sanristil's college teammate and immediately added someone that they feel like they could plug and play on the outside. They chose not to. Mike Green, who was my second favorite pass rusher in this class, behind a pass rusher that was destined to go in the top three the entire time, and Abdul Carter. Green's got red flags based on allegations and issues legally, women involvement, over his career dating back to high school. Obviously, those flags were so substantial that not only Washington, but every other team chose to pass on him. Donovan Ezeraku,
yep.
We talked about from Boston College, 16 and a half sacks, ACC Defensive Player of the Year. He's not going to be there for them. That would be a great fit. They chose not to take him. All because they wanted to protect their number one asset, Jaden Daniels, and complete their offseason project, their offensive line refurbishing, with bookend tackles Laremy Tunsil on the left and Connerly on the right. It's not what I saw coming, but everyone keeps saying, what'd you think? And my takeaway is, you'll never get me to be upset about picking an offensive tackle. And I absolutely love anything that results in making sure Jaden Daniels stays on the field. So if so facto, I like the pick.
Yeah. So the couple things curious about it. You touched on what they didn't take. I think it's always important. But point two, left tackle at Oregon. That's the biggest reason I didn't see that coming is you would assume that a team that drafts him is going, he's a left tackle. So there must be some ability or must be some thought that, of course, he'll play on the right side here. And again, naively, I thought, oh, here's what they're going to do. Brandon Coleman, who I thought played adequately to even well at times, as a third-round rookie for the team this past year at left tackle, they'll kick him over to right tackle. They've now upgraded two different positions, the left tackle and the right tackle spot. Maybe you kick Wiley inside to the right side, for if and when Sam Cosby comes back. Maybe you have Coleman maybe potentially battle with Alec Reddy, but it sounded like they were kicking him to the right. And so that's all she wrote in my mind. You've now changed two tackle spots. Well, not so fast. I think now what we learned is either Coleman and Connerly are going to battle a tackle initially, or they view Coleman as a guard, the way most of the league did in his pre-draft process. So it's interesting to me, just how it's going to fit. But your takeaway is my takeaway. Going into the draft, I'm going, everybody's focused on defensive end and cornerback because that's the obvious need. That's glaring. And I think it still is, by the way. I think they've got work to do in those two spots. To me, though, the axiom of let's not count on miracles again. Let's not count on a miraculous, incredible, unbelievable run where they couldn't run the football, couldn't really protect Jaden Daniels adequately at times, and he worked magic down the stretch. They're playing ball control without being able to run the football. He was so good, he overcame some of their deficiencies. If I have a gripe, it's I wish they'd kind of focused some of this stuff last year. But you're never going to get me to be upset at going to get a marquee left tackle in Tunsil. You're never going to get me to be upset to go, we're going to do more to protect our young quarterback that's about to face a more arduous schedule. The league's had a year to adjust, and defensive coordinators have stayed up late at night figuring out how to stop Kingsbury and Daniels and everything else. I want him to be safe and sound. You will never get me upset and investing resources
it,
there.
To me, is so simple, right? What is the most important thing this organization can do? The best thing they can do is elevate and accentuate the skills of
Jaden Daniels. Maximize and protect, man.
That's all they should think about every hour of every day. You've hit the lottery with the quarterback. How do you keep him healthy? How do you get the best production out of him? How do you surround him with the most so that he can shine? It's business 101, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's what is your best asset? Okay, yep. How do we now explore and exploit that to be the best version of ourselves? Taking a tackle is going to help them do that. That's number one. Number two, you get a 21-year-old who Mel Kiper said on the telecast last night he thinks would be a top five-ish pick next year if he were to go back to school and then come out a year from now. That was a reoccurring theme when I was asking people last night about the Connerly pick. They mm-hmm. said, this is a guy. It's a year-early pick, essentially. You play him at right tackle right now. And everyone says, well, you just drafted a right tackle at 29. Yes, you did, first of all. Nothing wrong with that. I'm not convinced, though. Let's say Laremy Tunsil, who's not a kid, he's a 30-year-old tackle. If in a couple of years Laremy Tunsil has played well and you're either not going to keep paying him or he starts to fade or isn't at the same level, maybe this is your future left tackle. Yep. Maybe this is your long-term answer at left tackle. But at 21 years old, with the growth last football season that everybody talks about and unbelievable footwork and athleticism, there's a Trent Williams-type feel to this. I don't mean he's that caliber of player. Trent went in the top five for a reason. He's going to the Hall of Fame. But what I mean is Trent Williams used to play point guard at pickup basketball games at Lifetime Fitness in Ashburn. He would go between his legs and dunk.
Yes.
Left tackles don't do that.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen the video of this guy, but last year he was catching passes, caught a touchdown. He got a direct snap and ran off tackle on a goal line play. like the ability to move and to be an athlete in this offense with Cliff Kingsbury,
you know, they like
the bubble stuff and some of the screens. I think it makes it makes perfect sense. And, yes. And it is exactly what we should have been thinking about and weren't. You saw the note, I'm sure, from Cliffy. Kingsbury left the note on Peter's desk saying, get me the left tackle from Oregon. And he did.
I thought that was really cool. Now, I don't think we would have seen that note had Connerly gone or otherwise, or he wasn't available, or they picked somebody else. But
that would be a weird note for Adam Peters to show.
Somebody left this.
After they took Mike Green, right. If he said, you know, Cliff Kingsbury left me this note. Sorry, Cliff. And then crumbles it up.
And then tore it up. Again, the folks that are disappointed, by the way, that's what's beautiful about this whole thing, right? Everyone's going to have a reaction. The way mock drafts work and the way prognostication, this whole industry works, is you have somebody smart, look at what they perceive as the needs of the team are, and then try to line up a player that has those attributes or plays that position or whatever. So anybody's disappointed, it's because you thought they have to get an edge and there are going to be edges available. And there were multiple edges available that I actually thought that's where they were going to go. One of those couple guys. You mentioned Ezeraka. I thought that was going to be the pick, to be honest with you, until I saw Connerly. But remember, they've got a different set of plans. Sometimes they're wrong. Sometimes they're right. This group has gotten some benefit of the doubt from me, at least. They've got a vision. It's not just, you know, this year we'll try this, and this month we'll try this. And, you know, it's all kind of different. See Rivera and the Marty Party. So to me, they identified their largest potential paradigm, maybe not need, but the largest thing, the most important thing is kind of not to pat myself on the back, but kind of the summary that you and I are saying here is that's not getting easier for Daniels. We have to make sure we're doing everything we possibly can to secure him and then to maximize him. And that became a priority here. They needed to upgrade that offensive line, and it was a more glaring thing with a player that they valued higher than some of these other defensive ends or corners.
They had a choice. They could have taken a player at their biggest need, which is what I would have done. They did not.
Right.
They could have gone to their second biggest need. Would have liked that too. They didn't do that. I don't even think tackle was a top three or maybe even a top five need for them, honestly. Not that I'm a Wiley guy. I think I was one of the first people to beat that drum that I was out a few weeks into year one of Andrew Wiley with a different coaching staff. But I just didn't think with Coleman now able to move over and take that job from him on the right side.
I didn't anticipate it.
They didn't need to do it, but they wanted to do it. And I'm okay with that. And they liked the player enough. You know, as desperate as they are to trade back because of how limited they are in the number of picks, that there were absolutely teams trying to come up and called them. And they said, "Now we're good. This is the guy we wanted." That conviction makes me feel even better. The last point I want to make on this is I also think there is an element of that pick. While it's not reacting to the night, but you've got to look at your division. You have to look at the teams that you play two times a year and what they're good at. The Eagles just won a Super Bowl torching offensive lines all the way through, including Kansas City's, right? They've got a great front. Jalen Carter's an animal. Nolan Smith gets back healthy. Stud. They paid Bryce Huff a ton of money. Really, really good defensive front. You've got to be able to be prepared and be able to stop them. The Giants last night made what was my favorite pick of the first round because it was super easy when they got Abdul Carter in the top three. But Brian Burns, who they gave up ones for last year. Dexter Lawrence is one of the best D tackles in the league. That might be the best defensive group of four on paper in the NFL at this point in New York. Dallas is a tier down, in my opinion, but you still have Micah Parsons.
They're still good, yeah.
They signed Dante Fowler from here, who was a double-digit sack guy last year. They paid Odighizuwa, who's a good player. So you're in a division where they can get after the quarterback, and you better be able to feel really, really good at both tackle spots. And if you say, well, what about Brandon Coleman? They may have thought all along, we'll try him at tackle in the meantime. He was a third-round pick. It's not like he was a top 15 pick. If he moves to guard, so be it. He could be a really good guard. I mean, Washington did that with Brandon Scherff, and he was a top five pick.
Yeah.
So you could still get great value out of Coleman if he's your long-term left guard. And that's my guess now is that you'd have Tunsil at left tackle when everybody's healthy. You would have Coleman at left guard, Biotish at center, Cosme at right guard, and then Connerly at right tackle. But let's talk to Mike Tice next. He thinks that Washington got the best offensive lineman in the entire draft based on his scouting. The longtime former NFL O-line and head coach joins us in moments. We're at Pupatella Pizza in Chantilly. Come on by and hang with us today ahead of Game 3 for the Caps and Night 2 of the NFL Draft. You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan.
Hello.
Hi, is this Josh?
Yeah.
Josh, what's up, man? It's Adam Peters with the Commanders. How you doing?
What's going on? How are you?
Doing great, man. I've been for about 20 picks. Hoping you
know, yeah.
Man. Welcome to the Brotherhood. We are so pumped to have you.
Rainier Beach to D.C., bro.
Hell yeah.
Hell
yeah.
Where's my Brotherhood bell? That's a good line, though. Welcome to the Brotherhood. I can already see the graphic at the end of the draft with all of the new players that are being brought in and the Commanders welcoming them to the Brotherhood.
It feels very on brand.
Well played by Adam Peters last night. Said that they were waiting for about 20 picks with bated breath to see if Connerly would fall to them. And he was not mocked in that 10 to 15 range in very many places, but it takes one team, and you don't know how everybody feels.
Right.
To feel like you do, right? And the Commanders thought that he was not only a first-round talent, but a plug-and-play starting tackle. And if a team in the middle of the first round who needs one does as well, then you lose your guy. So with each pick, you're not only wondering about the team on the clock, but is someone going to trade up? And they didn't have the ammunition to go up to get who they wanted. And so you just got to wait, and you're like the rest of us, a spectator. And then lo and behold, things work out the way they wanted. And Cliff Kingsbury, who left a note on the desk of his head coach, gets his man with Connerly falling 229, and he's going to be your right tackle in week one.
That's what it sounds like, yeah. I mean, the thought, the hope, the desire to make sure that part was solidified. Again, I didn't see it coming, and I don't know how we could have. This organization now under Peters and company is so tight-lipped. They're so good at keeping those secrets. They're not letting you in on what they're thinking or whatever, and they were able to find someone that they – figured, hey, this is a massive upgrade from what we've got. We've now got this asset in Coleman we can deploy, whether it's left guard, right guard, or compete at right tackle, whatever you want to do. They solidified an area that's of critical import. Now that you've got the prize jewel that is Jaden Daniels, it doesn't get easier from here, man, with everybody coming to get him and trying to knock him down.
On site, in the building last night for the draft party, I'm still hanging out with all the listeners out at MGM National Harbor at Tap Sports Bar when the pick was made. And you can look at the reaction on our 106.7 The Fan Instagram. But it was kind of quiet. I think that people were pretty surprised. And I guess that makes sense. I mean, you're listening to us for your content as a station. You're reading a lot of things in town. Nobody was talking about Josh Connerly.
No.
In fact, we had 14 different people on who either work at the station on air or are on the beat covering the team every day for their predictions, and not one of them picked Connerly, which had not happened in our entire existence as a show.
So beyond that, I would ask, just because it kind of became my thing, to ask every analyst we had on, whether they covered the team or were draft experts or people that cover this thing for a living, said, what's the sneaky thing that no one's anticipating that they might do? And it never came up then, right? It was you might see him do a running back, or they could take this corner, or, you know, who knows? There was a guard or two, maybe. I think it was Donovan Jackson. If he had slipped into the late 20s, that maybe they could have taken. I said, what's the sneaky thing that no one's anticipating that could possibly happen? It didn't even come up then. Just to give you an idea of how, I don't want to say it's out of left field. They knew what they were doing. But for us on the outside looking in, I did not anticipate this one at all.
I think what we fell victim to collectively as a media unit was focusing and zeroing in on the significant needs.
Yep.
They do not have a starting edge who can get you 10 sacks. Clearly, they have to hope one falls to them and grab them. And then two did, and they said, no, thank you. They still need a lot of help at cornerback. they better be right about Marshon Lattimore.
Yeah.
They think he's going to have a really good year. They did go out and add some corners, but it's still a position where they're not good enough in a passing league to be a strength. So obviously, if a corner falls, they'll take him. And then one did, and they said no thank you because they fell in love with this tackle who's athletic, it can move his feet, and might be able to play both sides ultimately if that's what happens down the road on the left. But what's interesting to me is he's never played right tackle before.
Mm.
I'm not saying that that transition is impossible, but it's also not seamless. And generally, when you draft a left tackle out of college, there's been some right tackle on the resume. He's really never played on the right side. So I think that's going to be a fascinating early part of training camp to see how he swings over.
Yeah, I mean, you usually get that, you know, an apprenticeship of some kind where he's at right tackle for a week, a month, a season when there's an incumbent at left tackle. But he, from day one, started at left tackle, stayed at left tackle, and that was the deal. And he was very good, really, really nice college career for himself there. As he, I think he transferred into Oregon and, you know, went up against a pretty high-level competition and more than held his own. So this is one of those dudes that, you know, again, we may not have anticipated it, but the more you read about it, the more you think about it, you go, you know what? I could see it now. It makes sense.
I wanted to get Mike Tice on the air with us on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Former head coach with the Minnesota Vikings and a longtime offensive coordinator, O-line coach. I'm not sure anybody knows more about O-line play than the former Terrapin. And he loved Connerly. So I just want to tap into his expertise on what he saw. Mike, you're on in D.C. It's Grant Paulson and Danny Ruye here on The Fan. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, guys. How are you?
Great.
Doing very well. Thank you for hopping aboard with us. So you had Connerly rated as your number one offensive lineman in the class from the guys that you studied at the top of the board. Why was that?
Yeah, well, I looked at 11 guys for my son, Nate, who does a show, a podcast on Yahoo Sports. And he asked me to take a peek at some of the top guys. And interestingly enough, he was pretty spot on because all of the guys I looked at got drafted yesterday. So, you know, I'd look for, I'm a big proponent of big and athletic, you know, and I like guys that are very large and can look me in the eye at, you know, 6'8", and can change direction and recover and play well in space. With all of these flanker screens that are out there today in the NFL, all these wide receiver screens, these tackles have to be able to block little guys in space. And I saw the film of Connerly, two really good games, and I felt like this guy could adapt to the NFL style of play and also be athletic enough to recover against some of those great edge rushers that are in the National Football League. I'll be honest with you. I had Josh Simmons way up there too from Ohio State, but he blew his knee out, so he kind of got dinged by me a little bit. But he's also a very good player. I want to give him his kudos as well. He got drafted behind Josh Connerly.
And Mike, you led me to my question. I wanted to know how he compared in your eyes. Obviously, the injury plays a part in it to Josh Simmons. Similar profiles there, right? Taller guy who can really move around.
Yeah, absolutely. And both players, to me, were very elite. I also like the kid out of Texas, Banks, who went third, another athletic guy. You know, you got to look at the style of play that they're playing in the league today. And, you know, that is getting these athletes in space and making the defense tackle. And, you know, a lot of those defensive players, those little guys, those corners, they don't want to tackle. So, you know, I think it's a good move, a great move by the Commanders. I'm really happy for my good friend Bobby Johnson, who's the O-line coach there, has done a great job. And I'm happy for the Commanders because this is a big step forward for what they're trying to do with their program.
Mike Tice on Grant and Danny, number one lineman he graded in this class as he watched the tape, is now in Washington at pick 29. Can you go deeper into, because Cliff Kingsbury majors in some of the stuff you talked about, the screens, getting out in space, needing those athletic tackles who can run and get out wide, like what you saw in terms of footwork and athletic traits, because Connerly got a direct snap on the goal line in a carry at Oregon. He caught a touchdown pass. It seems to me like he can move a little bit.
Well, he played running back in high school. And so that's, you know, and he was a basketball player in high school. He went to Rainier Beach High School in Seattle. Of course, I have a cut my teeth in the NFL in Seattle and spent a lot of my adult life in Seattle and recently sold a home there that I had for years. And Rainier Beach High School, you got to come out of there with a little bit of you-know-what in your neck. So he's got some toughness to him. He played basketball at Rainier Beach High School. They were known for their basketball team. So I'm a big proponent on big athletic guys with the style of play that's going around in the National Football League. Now, this guy, Connerly, this kid, I haven't met him. I tell you what, he fits the mold perfectly, and I'm really, really happy for the Commanders.
Mike, when you're watching linemen and when you're grading a guy out like him who improved so much in the last year and is only 21 years old, how do you get a feel for, I don't know what you would call it, but that nastiness or that mean streak that is a necessity in the run game? Because I'm thinking about like Laremy Tunsil. We had a lot of people on from Houston to talk about the big elite left tackle Washington added, and they called him almost like a white-collar offensive lineman. Like, he's awesome. He's more finesse against the pass, but maybe he doesn't want to be pounding the football 30 times. Like, how do you figure that out as an evaluator?
Well, it's easy. You look at the film and see how guys finish. You know, if they're finishing through the echo of the whistle, they're finishing downfield. These are the kind of guys that have some grit to them. These are some of the guys that have been taught well by their coaches throughout their maturity process of high school, little league. And this is a credit to the coaches teaching young players how to finish. And this is also a credit to the university, whatever university that is, making sure these kids go out there and work hard and don't just take anything for granted.
What are the weaknesses right now that you see?
Well, it looks like to me that a little bit of strength issues, but that's a lot. You know, that goes around a lot. He can get strong. You got to remember, this kid's young. I mean, he's got some growing to do. He's got some learning to do. But he has the physical makeup. He's got some stuff he was born with that you can't teach, and that's that recoverability and that ability to bend and get out in space and move. And there's a lot of upside to this kid, a lot of upside.
You mentioned that you have a relationship with Bobby Johnson. So he came over from the Giants. When they hired him, I got to be honest, it was kind of maligned hire just because the Giants had such struggles on their offensive line. But he was one of the most valuable people in the building last year, did a really nice job. How far back do you guys know? How well do you know him?
Well, Bobby and I go back to when I coached for Jack Del Rio. We both did at Oakland, which was my last stop. And Bobby coached the tight ends, and I coached the offensive line. And Bobby and I worked together every week had our players do combinations together every week. I watched them grow. He asked a lot of great questions, and I'm very, very proud of Bobby. I think he's done a great job as an offensive line coach, starting with when he was in Buffalo.
Mike, my last one for you is there's a pretty good player that Grant mentioned, Laremy Tunsil, that looks to be the starter at left tackle, and it looks like Connerly would be in contention to start at right tackle. I think we underestimate that, but I'd love for you to give me your expertise here. How tough is it to kind of do that mirror image to go from left to right and do it at the highest level we got?
It's not that tough. You know, you go back to the kid that was drafted by the Jets, Membaugh, from Missouri. Okay, this kid is going to play on the right side. A left side, I'm not sure. The kid from LSU that went first, Will Campbell, I didn't see him as a left tackle. That's why I didn't have him that high. You know, there were some questions about his arm length and this and that, but you got a guy in Donovan, you got a guy in Simmons, and you got a guy in Connerly that are two guys that are able athletically to play wherever they put them. It doesn't really matter. And the same thing with Banks, the kid from Texas that went to the Saints. These are guys that if you got to put them on the right side while a veteran finishes up his tenure, if you will, then you put him on the right side. When he goes to the left side, he's going to have his feet under him because he's going to have a couple of years of playing in the league.
Mike Tice played in Maryland, ended up catching 11 touchdowns in the National Football League, had a terrific coaching career, head coach, longtime coordinator, and many, many years making offensive lines better. Before we let you go, do you remember a situation, I'm sure you had something like this, where Washington is kind of throwing a lot of guys at problems on their O-line in that now you've got maybe your bookend set, but Brandon Coleman started for them at left tackle last year. He kicks into guard. Andrew Wiley started at the other tackle. Maybe he kicks inside. They've created a bunch of competition. We don't really know who's going to end up starting, But there were guys that were starting last year that are now competing and may not, which means they've gotten better. Do you remember a situation like that where you went into a camp where everyone was going to be battling maybe?
I had that multiple times. In my 21 years coaching the offensive line, we had a lot of questions going into training camp. Now, the negative they have now, these young kids or these coaches really, in making their decisions is they don't have all that live contact work that we used to have in training camps where you can let it sort itself out. Nowadays, you know, they do everything in underwear, certainly don't want to get anybody hurt. And so it's a little bit more difficult, but it always sorts itself out. The guys that go into those preseason games and come out with blocking their guy a lot more than they didn't are the guys that end up being the starters.
Mike, this is great, man. Really appreciate the information. Thanks for taking the time with us.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Be well. There's Mike Tice, longtime NFL coach. Watched the tape on all the best linemen in this class and came away thinking Josh Connerly was the number one tackle. And Washington got him at the end of the first round. At the top of the hour at 3 o'clock, a little over 15 minutes from now, I want to go back through some of the non-DC storylines from last night, including the fall of Shedeur Sanders, who is still available going into round two. But next, we'll take our first look at the Caps as they get ready for game three. Will Alexi Protas be on the ice? We'll get you an update on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Pupatella Pizza. Pupatella and Chantilly, we're right off 50. Come on out. Have lunch. Get some drinks. Heck, it's Friday. Just get out of the office and
let's
call
go.
It a week. Why not?
This place rules.
Yeah, it's really good.
Pupatella's awesome. They got, I think it's 11 locations now. They're working their way up. The reason you have multiple locations is people like it. Pizza's delicious. Hospitality's great. Foodstuffs are awesome. It rules, man.
It's also just a great day to be on the air talking DC sports.
Why? What's going on?
NFL draft continues rounds 2 and 3 tonight. Mm-hmm. We'll have coverage deep into the evening on The Fan. Of course, you've got the Nats home taking on the Mets. Their homestand continues. Wraparound series Friday to Monday. Juan Soto back in town for the first time as a division rival. He has come back with the San Diego Padres and with the New York Yankees, but now he's got that lifetime contract with the Mets that shattered every record in Major League Baseball. So he will be back wearing Mets gear. That's a storyline. And the grand finale of the items that we're covering on the show today, the Capitals are getting ready for game three. It's postseason hockey time in the nation's capital. And after two games at home, the Caps have handled their business.
Listen,
they are up 2-0.
They've played twice. They've won twice. That's all you can ask for, right? I mean, how it happened, I'm aware. I saw those third periods just like you guys did. But your net, your Stone Cold Steve Austin bottom line is they're up 2-0. You cannot ask for a better situation. And this group, you know, there are times where being a veteran group, being one of the older teams, where you would go, I don't know if that's such an advantage, right? It's a long grind of a regular season. You get into February and March and it's a bit of a slog. This is one of those times where I go, I'm glad this is a veteran group. Who better to handle what is going to be a bat bleep crazy environment on the road there? A bunch of kids might get wide-eyed. A bunch of kids might get a little, you know, nervous about it. But this group is veteran. They understand that the first 5-10 minutes are going to be insane, and they will be ready to rock and roll. They'll be able to withstand that pressure, hopefully. And then let's settle in and play some hockey. I'll take my chances.
Alexi Protas is on the trip. The question's going to be, will Alexi Protas play in this game or not? Spencer Carberry's trying to keep it a mystery at this point. Carbs, I think, is just trying to make this interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't see, with a 2-0 series lead in game three, pushing Protas, who has been limping still, who is struggling to skate at full speed. It would be very, very surprising if he played, but you can never really bet against it because hockey guys are just different. We talked about it with Alex Alexiev, who had a bunch of teeth knocked out and was leaking from his mouth and had to go get oral surgery in the morning. And then the next day was in action for game two and didn't miss a beat. So I guess you lose a lot of money generally if you keep betting against hockey players to play. But it seems to me like every time you win, you buy yourself a few more days without your best even strength player.
Yeah.
And that's what's amazing about this. A year ago, Alexi Protas was a back of the roster, young, hopeful talent. That's what he was. He was a project.
Yeah.
It was a prospect that they hoped could turn into a good player. Fast forward to right now, losing him was paramount. It was significant. And on top of that, Alexi Protas was someone that in the regular season at even strength had some of the best numbers as far as the data and the analytics went in the entire National Hockey League.
That's a great way to put it. Like, as you just said, think about where we were last year at this point, where it's like, he looks the part, right? He moves around. He uses a stick that's like a condor wing. It's like 8 feet, you know, 9 feet long, it seems like, when he's out there on the ice. He's big and fast and has some skill, but, you know, okay, we'll see what it turns into. Well, here's what it turned into. As you said, one of the best 200-foot players in the NHL, a guy that's not out there to knock you into next week or, you know, getting a bunch of fist fights, but someone that uses his size like a hockey player. Right, I always remember you and me talking to Mike Rizzo about Trey Turner, for example, where there are guys that are fast who play baseball, and then there's baseball players who are fast. Like, he's a hockey player that happens to be really big, right? Using his, you know, obviously it's not the same. This is one of the two or three best players of all time. So I'm not telling you they're the same. But there's a Lemieux quality to that, where Lemieux was a massive dude, right? And you go, oh, my God, I bet you he's, you know, checking people into Monday. No, no, no. He's just simply using his body very well to box you out, to get to where he wants to go on the ice, always smooth, under control. Protas has some of that same acumen to be able to do that. So getting him back, I think, will be such a boost. And sometimes it's not always in the goal scored or otherwise. It's in some of the hidden plays, winning some puck battles, getting a couple forechecks going, et cetera.
Joe Beninati, 5 o'clock tonight. We will talk to him about game three. And at 6 o'clock, we've got our Capital to Score a Goal draft. The leaderboard right now, producer Darius has 3. Ryan has 2. Danny sitting at 1.
I got 1.
Myself and Toby still goose eggs through 2 games. So we got some work to do in the Capital to Score a Goal draft. But next, we'll take you through round 1, all the big storylines from last night. Who are the best remaining players in round 2? And might any of them still be on the board when Washington makes a pick at the end of the second round if they stick and pick at 61? This is The Fan.